课堂听 class.com。
Unit 16. The Little Guy. Section 1. Listening Comprehension. Exercise 1. Listen to the following passages and then decide whether the following statements are true or false.
1. Mr. Abbas was visiting a morning tent in Gaza when dissident gunmen from his Fatah party opened fire, chanting slogans against him. In the ensuing chaos, Mr. Abbas was whisked to safety by his bodyguards, but two of them were killed. Mr. Abbas later rejected suggestions that it had been an attempt to assassinate him.
2. Thanks to Americans' seemingly bottomless appetite for more debt, Mr. Ginsburg still predicts employment growth in the debt collection industry at home, if the agencies can attract new workers. As it happens, few Americans seem to enjoy hassling their compatriots to pay credit card debts or hospital bills they cannot afford.
3. Anxious observers will have to wait until later in the month to confirm which parts of the euro area's giant economy are losing the most steam. But it is likely that both French consumers and German exporters, the euro area's twin-stroke engine of growth in the first half of the year, have misfired since.
4. A widely watched index of their economic expectations, compiled by the ZEW Research Institute, collapsed in November to 13.9 from a reading of 31.3 the month before. The Institute blamed, in part, the euro's appreciation, which it described not as brutal, but as very distinct nonetheless.
5. The current Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, will retire shortly after his term as a governor expires at the end of January 2006. Who will replace him? One plausible candidate is John Taylor, the Treasury's point man for international affairs. He may not be the favorite to take charge, but, according to many of his peers, the Fed has long since submitted to Taylor's rule.
6. In 1998, America introduced so-called business method patents, granting for the first time patent monopolies simply for new ways of doing business, many of which were not so new. This was a mistake. It not only ushered in a wave of new applications, but it is probably inhibiting, rather than encouraging, commercial innovation, which had never received or needed legal protection in the past.
7. Cancer is characterized by uncontrolled cell growth. Healthy cells regulate their division into daughter cells carefully, subordinating their own Darwinian tendency to reproduce in favor of the survival of the body they inhabit. It is one of the marvels of evolution that they are able to do this and so allow the development of multicellular creatures. But evolution works on many levels, and it is almost inevitable that mutations in some of the trillions of cells that make up a human body will display the regulatory genes. Then, it is just a matter of the survival of the fittest among cells. in a competition between regulated and unregulated cells, the unregulated ones will multiply faster and win. The result is cancer.
8. Islands are famous for generating indigenous species from whatever biological material pitches up on them. One frequent trend observed in such island species, at least when they are large mammals, is dwarfism. Elephants seem particularly susceptible. The last mammoths, which lived on an island off the coast of Siberia, were paradoxically dwarfs. Similar elephantine examples are known from Malta, Sicily, and indeed Flores itself. And the same thing has been observed in cattle too.
9. In May next year, these 8 countries will join the European Union, along with the Mediterranean islands of Cyprus and Malta. Bulgaria and Romania will follow in 2007, if they can reform and modernize fast enough. A queue of other hopefuls is forming for the years after that, with Croatia at the head, Turkey and the countries of the Western Balkans, Albania, Bosnia, Macedonia, Serbia, and Montenegro some way behind.
10. It is well established in both humans and other species that successful males have lots of offspring, while unsuccessful ones have few or none. Females, by contrast, show a smaller range of reproductive output, with most having some offspring, but none having as many as the most successful males. Exercise 2. Choose the one answer that best fits the meaning of the statement you have heard.
1. Though the approaches of the 3 researchers differ slightly, all are based on detecting imperfections in the print quality of documents. Old-school forensic scientists were, at least so the movies would have you believe, able to trace documents to particular typewriters based on quirks of the individual keys. The researchers from Purdue employ a similar approach, exploiting the fact that the rotating drums and mirrors inside a printer are imperfect pieces of engineering, which leave unique patterns of banding in their products.
2. An ad hoc subcommittee under the purview of the National Research Council's Committee on Agricultural Biotechnology, Health, and the Environment, CABHE, will review and evaluate biological methods used for purposes of confining genetically engineered organisms. The study will focus on biological methods for confining transgenic crop plants, grasses, trees, fish, and shellfish, but will also consider methods used for other categories of transgenic organisms. The committee will focus on genetic mechanisms of biological confinement, such as induced sterility, but will also identify and discuss other available or possible biological confinement methods. Methods resulting in significant reductions in the risk of escape into the environment will be identified, and their efficacy for reducing environmental risk assessed.
3. The first cases of a virus related to smallpox have been reported in the Americas. At least 23 cases of monkeypox have been detected in 3 Midwestern states, Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Although similar in many ways to smallpox, monkeypox is less infectious and less deadly than its more famous relative. The disease occurs primarily in Central and West Africa. Although state and federal officials are still investigating the cause of the Midwest monkeypox cases, they do know that all the patients had direct or close contact with infected prairie dogs kept as pets.
4. Three New England states filed suit against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in an effort to force the government to regulate carbon dioxide emissions, citing the chemical's contribution to global warming. Their suit aims to reclassify carbon dioxide as a criteria pollutant, joining nitrogen dioxide, ozone, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, carbon monoxide, and lead. The Clean Air Act requires the government set and enforce standards for allowable atmospheric levels of these pollutants.
5. More than 190 countries unanimously adopted the first international treaty against smoking at a meeting of the World Health Organization. The treaty calls for an advertising ban and new labeling for tobacco products, indoor air controls to reduce secondhand smoking, and stronger legislation against tobacco smuggling.
6. Windows, just a prototype in 1983, is now the dominant personal computer, PC, operating system, having seen off a host of rivals. The computer industry has mushroomed in size, gone through several booms and busts, and is now worth around $870 billion. Microsoft has become the world's largest software firm, and Mr. Gates, the world's richest man. His firm has also, of course, been through a bruising battle with antitrust regulators. But even as the landscape has changed around Mr. Gates, his position as the industry's figurehead has remained unchallenged. Each year, for two digital decades, he has returned to COMDEX to rally the industry, hold court with analysts and journalists, unveil new products, and present his optimistic vision of the future.
7. As it happens, voters in all the Central European countries due to join the EU next year have supported entry, often by large majorities, in referendums over the spring and summer. Now, these countries have a last few months to prepare themselves for the shocks and strains, as well as the opportunities and rewards that lie ahead.
8. One shock for many people may be the discovery that EU entry does not in itself bring wealth. The countries of Central Europe will take a very long time to catch up with their Western neighbors. The Economist Intelligence Unit has calculated that if the 15 countries of the current EU enjoy economic growth of 2% a year, and the countries joining in 2004 and 2007, including Bulgaria and Romania, grow by about 4% a year, then it will take the new members, on average, more than 50 years to draw level with the old ones. If the new members manage only 3% growth, it will take them 90 years to catch up.
9. The ability to remain anonymous and have a choice about when and to whom one's identity is disclosed is an essential aspect of a democracy. The technology a system uses, whether scanning a face or using a smart card, is less important in maintaining privacy than the way the system is designed and the scope of the system. Our report offers good design practices to follow when setting up an authentication system. Using them will improve security for the system and privacy for the users. Considerations particularly relevant to ongoing policy debates, such as about national identity cards and frequent traveler cards.
10. Net inflows of investment into American bonds and shares plunged from $50 billion in August to only $4 billion in September, the lowest level since the crisis caused by the collapse of long-term capital management in October 1998. The very suggestion that foreigners might not continue to buy dollar assets in future was enough to make some investors sell this week. A cheaper dollar will help to reduce America's external deficit, while at the same time supporting growth. The risk is that if the greenback falls too fast, bond yields could rise, choking off recovery. Section 2, Reading.
Cheap gas. Prompt. Speaking of New York, one thinks of skyscrapers, the Broadway musicals, or the media tycoons on the Madison Avenue. But one wouldn't pass a thought, perhaps, on the millions of city dwellers there, including one ordinary, or rather extraordinary man, named Inder Parmar, an Indian immigrant and a former cabbie driver, now selling gas in Queens. He turned his fury at the oil giants. Late this spring, as gas prices reached record highs and the Bush and Kerry campaigns jostled over which candidate was more pump-friendly, a Queens man named Inder Parmar began selling gas at about 30 cents below the market rate. By his reckoning, the big oil companies charge too much. They should not be ripping off the American public like they are, he explained one day at his gas station in Long Island City. They are taking advantage of people's anxiety about the war. Parmar, who immigrated to the United States from India 25 years ago, has spent the past couple of years acting as a kind of one-man insurrectionary force against big petroleum. A Punjabi combo of Robin Hood, Thomas Paine, and Al Goldstein. He is 44 and has a fleshy, boyish face and a penchant for corny cashier humor. For example, he likes to ask gray-bearded bikers for ID before selling them beer. As he spoke, a steady line of vehicles, mostly taxis and town cars, pulled up to the pumps out front. Parmar drove a taxi for 5 years before he went into the gas business in 1989, and his station offers the sort of amenities that cabbies like. Cheap gas, free coffee, unlocked bathrooms. It is also covered with signs. One reads, "Regular gas, $1.89, vote for Kerry." Another says, "Getty Lukoil, Russian tycoon, supported by President Bush and Putin, the sweatshops of America." Armed with these slogans, a fax machine behind the deli counter, and a well-stoked sense of outrage, Parmar has been waging a guerrilla campaign against Getty, from whom he has been leasing his station. Getty franchise signs still mark the premises, but he has covered them with blue plastic tarps. His falling out with the company dates to 2002, after Getty was acquired by the Russian oil conglomerate Lukoil. And for Parmar, the feud has the sting of a love affair gone sour. In the early years, his relations with his landlord were amiable enough, but once Lukoil took over Getty, he says, his rent was raised, which squeezed his operating margin to the point where it was nearly impossible for him to earn a living. They make 60 cents a gallon, Parmar claimed. They give their dealers only 3 or 4 cents a gallon. In June of last year, Parmar formed a lobbying association of fellow Getty station operators, many of them from India, Pakistan, and the Middle East, who felt aggrieved under the new regime. The group convened over curry at the Flushing Banquet Hall and delegated their newly appointed president, Parmar, to approach Getty with a list of complaints. Parmar drove out to Getty headquarters in East Meadow, Long Island, and met with a senior executive. But, after a brief detente, he elected to take a more confrontational route. In a simultaneous act of protest and thrift, Parmar stopped paying his rent. Getty stopped delivering gas and served him with an eviction notice, which he chose to contest in court. With his pumps cut off, Parmar was forced to rely on a meager trade in candy and cigarettes. Legal fees were draining the family savings, but he had found a crusade. He faxed a flurry of letters to politicians in the United States and Russia. He picketed Getty headquarters with his 3 children during their spring break. He called Lukoil headquarters in Moscow every day, for months. There is only one person there who speaks English, Dmitry, Parmar said. If you call at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning our time, you can talk to Dmitry personally. Reached in Moscow last week at 6:21 a.m., Dmitry, whose last name is Dolgov, sounded very wary of the subject of Inder Parmar and referred questions to our daughter company in New York. A Getty spokesman characterized Parmar as a bitter, disgruntled former dealer and said that his charges against the company and his depiction of the economics of the petroleum business were false and misleading. In April, Parmar found an independent New York wholesaler who would sell him gas, and soon the pumps were flowing again. Like a Yankee Stadium hot dog vendor without a permit, Parmar announced cut rate prices. As word got out, the station thrived. People made special trips for cheap gas. Parmar marked the 4th of July by declaring independence with the American public, which meant slashing prices by 4 more cents and playing party music from speakers that had been rigged up near the pumps. Testimony in the eviction trial ended a few weeks ago. Afterward, Parmar returned to the station dressed in his courthouse clothes, green cargo pants, white button-down shirt, with a quick farm patch. The judge's ruling will be delivered soon, and although Parmar seems resigned to the fact that eviction looms, a festive air hung over the station. His brother Singh brought out watermelon slices on paper plates. Parmar ate a piece and considered his future. Maybe I will be a manager at another gas station, he said. Or drive a taxi.
Section 3. Speaking Up. Try to answer the following questions after you have heard the above passage. 1. When did Inder Parmar begin selling gas at about 30 cents below the market rate? 2. How old is Parmar, and what did he do before he went into the gas business? 3. When did Parmar fall out with the company Getty, and why? 4. Why was it difficult for Parmar to earn a living after Getty was acquired by the Russian oil conglomerate Lukoil? 5. How did a Getty spokesman characterize Parmar? 6. How did Parmar mark the 4th of July? Section 4. Writing. Write a short summary of the passage you have heard.